And I'll get mine going. All right, back on the record, November 29th, 2023, 4 o'clock p.m. Silver View Appeal. We are in the testimony from Bill Leiter. Mr. Bricklund just finished direct, so I'm moving on to Mr. Lynn for cross.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Leiter.
Good afternoon.
The storm manual approved by Ecology and then in this case adopted by Kitsap County is sort of the Bible for stormwater compliance, isn't it?
That's correct.
And that's what you have to design to, and that's what establishes pipe sizes and acceptable grades for pipe, and that's how you calculate the volume of stormwater to be anticipated and a variety of other aspects of
That's not correct. Ecology Stormwater Manual deals primarily with water quality and flow control and control of on-site pollutants and temporary erosion sediment control, things like that. Pipe sizing, however, is usually dictated by the municipality. And okay. So some municipalities might want a 100-year storm event. I've seen some Seattle used to have 25-year storm design flows.
Okay. With that correct, would you agree that the stormwater manual is the basis for the work of designing a stormwater management system?
Generally, yes. For, like I said, for flow control, water quality.
And with respect to water quality, it dictates the type of water quality treatment required and where enhanced treatment is required and where not, correct?
Right. It provides the guidelines for what the BMPs can be selected.
Okay. And just to cut to the chase on a water quality issue, if there was a condition that required the applicant to provide enhanced water quality treatment, would that be something you would recommend?
Well, absolutely, if that was what the manual required.
Okay. So you'd go with what the manual required, not what you subjectively thought. In other words, it's not just what you think is a good idea, it's what the manual dictates.
Correct.
Okay. And the manual is obviously applied by the county, in this case, with the help of a third-party reviewer. Is that accurate?
In this case, they did have a third-party reviewer look at the design.
And have you've looked at the current design, and could you characterize the percentage of completion of that as a stormwater design?
Yes, I would say, other than some of the mistakes that I've found in it, it's probably a 60% design level.
Okay. Is that more than you would necessarily expect to find at the land use approval stage?
That's about what I would expect to see, but I would also expect to see it show that it's feasible to build.
Okay.
At that point.
Is it fair to say that the design will continue to evolve as it proceeds through the review and approval of final engineering drawings?
Yes, that would be true.
And is it also true that it could change even during construction? You might encounter something during construction that requires a revision of some kind. Is that also correct?
That happens frequently in construction.
Okay. And there are a number of conditions here. I'll just list a few of them that require compliance with the storm manual 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 24. If those are imposed as a result of a land use approval, don't those conditions then have to be met or the project cannot be built?
Well, I don't know what the conditions that you just referred to that you rattled off of 16, 17, 18 doesn't mean anything to me. But generally speaking, the stormwater requirements have to be met. Oftentimes, municipalities don't enforce them. And so I've seen many projects go forward that were badly designed and get built and then have problems down the road.
Okay. All right. So are you asking the hearing examiner to review this as if the county's not going to enforce the conditions of approval?
Well, I'm just saying that I have seen other municipalities approve things and then not go out and actually inspect to see that the design was built as it was approved. And in this particular case here, the approval, the requirements of the previous hearing examiner who looked at the project and had laid down certain baseline requirements that needed to be met have not been met.
In your opinion?
In my opinion.
Okay. So you agree with the statement that the bigger the pipe, the more chance for utility conflict?
Yes. It's not only the pipe gets bigger, but then also the bedding around the pipe, because there's typically a 6-inch sand bedding around the pipe that needs to be installed so that there's not a rock, for instance, impinging a force on the pipe that would break it. And then you need to have separation between the pipe and any other utility so that you don't impinge forces on the other utility. And then lastly, you need to have separation between the utilities so that if the telecommunications utility or the water company or whoever needs to get in and dig up their utility, that they can do so without harming somebody else's utility.
And your calculation for determining the size of the pipe was based on the rational method, which is one of the methods allowed by the stormwater manual, correct?
Not by the ecology stormwater manual. Again, the ecology stormwater manual does not specify the methodology to size piping.
I'm not talking about, but you based your calculation of the size of the pipe on your application of the rational method, didn't you?
Yes, I did, which was what's the preferred method of Kitsap County and many other municipalities.
So there are a number of methods that are acceptable under both the ecology manual and the Kitsap County method or manual. Isn't that accurate?
No, that's not accurate. They're not acceptable. Again, the ecology manual does not address sizing of conveyance piping.
Okay.
So that is done by the municipality and under the Kitsap County's surface water design manual.
Okay. And it permits a variety of methodologies, doesn't it?
No, it says the preferred method is the rational method.
There's a difference between preferred and required, isn't there?
There is.
Okay. And even if it preferred it, it allows others, doesn't it?
That would be up to the county, but the thing about the rational method is being it generates larger flows than, say, the Western Washington hydraulic model does. But many municipalities prefer that because it provides a factor of safety for larger storms, or as we see now, climate change is impacting our stormwater infrastructure. So it gives you a little breathing room. You never want to design an engineering project right to the wire. You always want to have a bit of factor of safety if you can do it.
Okay, so my question is, doesn't this Kitsap County allow any of the following methods, the rational method, the Santa Barbara method, and the WHM method?
Well, the Santa Barbara method is...
Just a simple question. Doesn't it permit all of those?
Well, it says the preferred method is... That would be up to the county to permit that.
Yeah. And
in this case here... The engineer used the rational method, but he misused the software and came up with the wrong answer.
So is it your testimony that the applicant used the rational method and not the WHM method?
Correct. That's in the drainage report. I could point you to the page if you'd like.
No, we'll clear that up as we go along. I guess here's my question. Is the WH method more sophisticated, involving more data inputs than the older and less widely used rational method? Is that not an accurate statement?
The Western Washington model developed by Ecology and Clearwater Solutions, who's a software purveyor of that, writer of that software, was the purpose of that program was to size water quality treatment and flow control facilities, detention ponds, detention vaults, and the like. It was not intended, even though it can be used, to size piping. And so if you use one model, you're going to get a lower flow using the Western Washington hydraulic model than you would with the rational method.
My question is just, isn't it an accepted method that involves more data points, more input than the rational method?
It has. The rational method is more conservative. The Western Washington hydraulic model does use rainfall from a number of different gauges. But again, it's what the Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual recommends. And if it's using the rational method, if that's what it's recommending, then that's what should be used.
So it's your interpretation of the code is the word preferred with reference to small drainage basins means it's required on this site? Is that your interpretation?
That would be my interpretation, yes, that they should be using the rational method.
Okay. So notwithstanding what the county engineer says and what the third-party reviewer says, that's what you would recommend?
Well, the third-party reviewer didn't look at the calculations. And there was no comment that I saw that Mr. Taylor actually checked the calculations, that, number one, to see if they were right, and then number two, which method was used.
So there was no comment in that. You're not aware of what effort that was made by the third-party reviewer with respect to the storm drainage plan?
Well, all I'm aware of is what's in the record.
Okay. Would you agree that while the rational method is more conservative, in some respects it's less accurate in others?
What do you mean by less accurate?
Well, would you size a detention basin based on the rational method?
No, because the software is not intended for that use. It's got one use and one use only, and that's for sizing conveyance of stormwater.
Okay. The time of concentration issue you mentioned is only relevant with respect to the rational method. Is that accurate? It doesn't apply if we're applying the WHM or Santa Barbara methods?
Correct.
Well, let's talk about utility conflicts. One of the things you mentioned was that it was important for the applicant to talk to CenturyTel and other providers. If the applicant had spoken with those utility providers and gotten their input, would that address that concern on your part?
Part of it. One of the requirements in the Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual is to consult with utilities, specifically telecommunications utility purveyors, to basically get their input. And like I said, I've worked with many, many utilities, and they all require different separations between utilities.
Okay. My question was just, if they did consult with them, and maybe I used the wrong term, I said talk with instead of consult, if they consulted or talked with the utility, wouldn't it address that concern of yours?
It would address the separation concern. But that, again, I saw nothing in the record that conversation occurred, or whether or not the utility had specified a 1 foot, 2 foot, whatever separation between their utility and the water or the stormwater line.
Can you point to us to some easement? I mean, this is in the public right of way.
Yes.
Can you point to us to some provision that allows CenturyTel to dictate the separation between the utilities? Or is that something that's up to the county and the county engineer?
Well, that's up to the utility purveyor. In the Kitsap County Road Design Manual, it states, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, that if it's a county-funded project, the county can essentially tell the utility, move your utility so we can put our stormwater line in.
That's not my question. You're going to have to listen to my question. My question is, isn't the separation between utilities within a public right-of-way, where the utilities are there by virtue of a franchise agreement, determined by the county engineer and not the utility?
Answering the question and you cut him off.
No, he wasn't. He was asking a question about whose cost it would be to move the utilities. That was not part of my question at all.
Let's move on and yeah, just rephrase your question, Mr. Lynn, and then we'll let Mr. Leiter answer it.
Isn't the location of use the utilities within a public right-of-way and their relationship to one another the province of the county engineer and not the individual utility provider?
The utility provider has to protect its assets. And it separates or states the separation between utilities. If another utility wants to come in and encroach into their space that they've already got a franchise for, then the utility has to buy off on that. The county cannot go in and say, we're going to allow that stormwater pipe to touch the bottom of the utility duct because it may crack the duct or cause some other problems in the future. And so
let him finish.
So the county cannot infringe on the utility rights that have been already franchised unless it's a funded project by the county.
Okay. That's your understanding of the county's road standards and the rights of an easement holder in a public
right-of-way? Yeah, and that is in the county's road design manual.
Very well. So you've suggested that the utilities be potholed now. Does it make sense to do a damaging test prior to the time you even have an approval for the project? If instead you could do that damaging test prior to construction?
Well, I don't know what you mean by damaging. Cutting a 6-inch diameter hole in the middle of the street is not a significant damage to the street, and then can be patch paved. But I, as an engineer, before I spent tens of thousands of dollars of my client's money, I'd want to know that my design is feasible and would work. And that has not been shown yet. GPR is not adequate to accurately locate to a tenth of a foot or an inch the location of an underground utility. And if you look at the printouts, they're pretty fuzzy. There's no ground penetrating radar company that's going to guarantee their work to that kind of an accuracy. But a land surveyor in a pothole can do that.
And can't that happen before construction? I mean, damage.
Again, if you do that, if you wait till construction to start it, then number one, you've gone through all this effort for a design that's not feasible to build.
And isn't that risk on the owner?
The hearing examiner found that needed to be done now. In the 2020 hearing, that was essentially the hearing examiner's finding. I concur with that you need to show that you've got a feasible project here before you move forward.
Okay. You have suggested that the storm system should be built before any work takes place on the site, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And doesn't part of the stormwater manual address the potential for construction type easements and dictate when the improvements are met? Isn't that part of the stormwater manual review process?
Not part of the stormwater manual. There's nothing in the stormwater manual that deals with easements. Again, that would be handled separately by the county.
I didn't ask about easements. You
mentioned easements.
I'm sorry?
You mentioned easements on there, and I'm just responding that there's nothing in the stormwater manual that deals with easements.
Okay. Does the stormwater manual require a temporary erosion and stormwater control plan?
A temporary erosion sediment control plan, yes, TESC for short.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't that typically dictate when certain improvements are provided during the construction process?
That talks about the BMPs that would be installed, like silt fences, sediment ponds, street sweeping and the like. It really doesn't come into play as far as the offsite routing of a stormwater pipe is concerned.
So where would the examiner find the authority to dictate that the stormwater system has to be fully in place, even if the construction is taking place during the summer, for example.
Objection calls for a legal opinion.
Well, I mean, he's been giving them right and left. I was just
I'll overrule on that. Mr. Leiter has been talking about what the storm manual requires, and it's in his ambit of expertise, so we'll let him answer that one.
Okay, could you repeat the question, please?
Well, I've forgotten the question, frankly.
Both of us.
I've got to go back in my notes now to that one. Just a second.
I think, wasn't it, does the stormwater manual require the stormwater system to be in place before construction?
Yes, thank you.
I would also object that nobody's arguing that it has to be in place. Our argument is its feasibility needs to be assessed, determined.
If that's the position, then it's different than what I understood from his memo, and I will withdraw the question. If the appellants are not asking that the system be in place, I don't need to ask the question.
We never. I don't know where that was said. It does not sound right to me.
There's not a question.
The hearing examiner previously held that the feasibility of the system had to be determined at this stage. That's what we're continuing to press for.
Fair enough. You offered some testimony about the water quality system. There are other systems besides the Forterra one, or I don't recall the one that's now owned by Contech.
Modular Wetland Systems, MWS.
Okay. There are other systems, aren't they, that require a lesser fall? I'm thinking specifically about the Biopod system by Old Castle and the EcoPure system by ADS. Don't those require considerably less fall to operate successfully?
Well, they should be shown now then on there and sized properly to these flows. Okay. Again, that goes back to the feasibility issue that has not been shown.
Okay. And so you'd feel better if those were called out instead of the system that was on the plan?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if that's not what why do you put a system on the plan if you don't propose to build it?
Well, I mean, things do happen during engineering that evolve during the process, do they not?
They do.
So at the present time, you agree that there are no 6PPDQ standards that the examiner could point to or any adopted by any governmental agency. Is that correct?
There have been no discharge limits set yet.
Okay.
But they're coming.
Okay. And you would urge that happen as quickly as possible.
Well, if we want to use best available science to do our design and approve our SEPA permits, then...
Again, you're asking a question I didn't ask.
Objection, well, witness has to be allowed to answer it.
Well, not if he's answering the wrong question.
You have to let him answer, and then you can object that the answer was non-responsive, but you have to let him answer.
You don't need to see the train wreck if it's coming.
Okay, all right. So, Mr. Lane, could you restate your question again? It was, the PPD is coming as soon as possible. The regulations.
Are you urging that the regulations be adopted as soon as possible? That was my only question.
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I've got meetings set up with Ecology to help expedite that.
Okay. This project you mentioned at McCord where conditions were imposed, was that under a federal authority of some kind?
It was under the NPDES permit issued specifically to McCord, or Joint Base Lewis McCord, JBLM.
Okay. You talked about the impact of the buildings as a dam. I'm assuming that's not a permanent dam. The water eventually finds its way around the footings and foundations, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. The majority of that water is going to be intercepted. It's going to continue its flow path until it encounters the building wall that's 11 feet deep from the ground surface to the bottom of the footing, a minimum of 11 feet deep, possibly deeper, if the footing has to be over excavated and put in at an even lower elevation. So the water that comes in there will hit the drain wall, the rock against the wall, drop vertically down, be intercepted by the perf pipe, and then, assuming that there's fall, will drain out to the catch basins and storm drain line on the south end of the side of the property, and then drain into the ditch on at the southwest corner of the property.
And that was my only question. The water doesn't stay forever behind the dam. It eventually moves around into the other drainage systems within the property.
Well, it'll be intercepted and taken out of the hydrologic cycle. So the natural discharge location, which was groundwater flow to the best property to the south, is now going to be discontinued. So that water will be intercepted and basically concentrated into the ditch that will quickly flow into the lagoon.
Okay. And are you a hydrogeologist?
No.
Okay. And is that subject, that is the recreation or the effort to mimic flows prior to development, something that's addressed by the stormwater manual?
Yes, it is. The hydro period is for wetlands, for instance, is one of the requirements in the stormwater management manual for Western Washington. Maintaining the natural discharge location, like I said, minimum requirement number 4 is a requirement of the stormwater manual. So those issues really need to be addressed. And in turn, basically, you're taking the water that would normally flow shallow subsurface ground flow between the aquitard of the confined artesian well or the artesian aquifer that's down deep, and then that upper area. So all of that water is going to be intercepted. And it'll be intercepted by the wall drains in the uphill sides of the apartment buildings.
So my question was simply, is that a subject that's addressed by the stormwater? That is the effort to mimic previously existing stormwater management on the site?
Yes, that is part of the stormwater management manual to maintain the natural discharge locations, whether it be surface or groundwater.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Gekas.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Leiter.
Good afternoon.
See if I can share my screen.
Sure.
Some of this will be a little bit repetitive, but it shouldn't take that long. Here we go. This is pulling up, showing you. I wonder why this doesn't. Oh, that's because this is not an F document. It's from appellant's exhibit 6, and it's page 3. So this is A6, page 3. And just to refresh your recollection, this is. Did you write this?
Yes, I did. The September 2nd report.
Okay. And that's where, and this is consistent with your testimony today, but I just wanted to point to it. We go down to page 3 here, starting with this sentence, as the KCSWDM section 4.2. It's got that word requires for all existing and proposed conveyance systems receiving drainage from a contributing area of 25 acres or less and having a time of concentration of 100 minutes or less. Use of the rational method, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll close that. I'm going to have to stop share. I'm going to have to close that. And then we'll go to applicant's supplemental exhibit on stormwater. So this is C2. And we'll go to... this is one of the attachments on stormwater from the applicant's supplemental exhibits. Now I'll share it. Share screen. Go to here. And we'll go to page 3 on this one as well. Oh, 4.2. For for all existing and proposed conveyance systems receiving drainage from a contributing area of 25 acres or less, having a time concentration of 100 minutes or less, the rational method may be used. So see the difference between that word may and your word required?
Yes, I do. I probably should have used may in there.
Okay, that's all I wanted to establish.
Yeah. That's everything, Mr. Yekas, or
just No. All right. I did want to establish it is May. It's not required.
All right. For that okay. Thank
you. I stand corrected.
And the rational method is where it's either a 24-inch pipe going up Mickleberry or an 18-inch pipe, right?
Correct. Using their method that they use with a time of concentration of 16, 17 minutes, it works out to be essentially an 18-inch pipe. If you use the 5 minutes that I did, it becomes 24.
Okay, so the fact that let me stop sharing. And the fact that the ACOP was granted and we have the MDNS, that doesn't mean construction can begin now, right?
Well, correct. You need to have the final permits and notice to proceed issued by the county.
Well, other things that you need the right-of-way permit, right, from public.
Yeah, the right-of-way permit, correct.
To get up Mickleberry and into Buckland Hill Road. I think you need a NPDES permit from Department of Ecology.
That's only for erosion control for temporary or for the stormwater pollution prevention plan and SWIP type thing. So that the NPDES permit is only for keeping sediment from leaving the site.
But you definitely still need the SDAP, right? Site Development Activity Permit. And so even if the county agreed that at the 60% design stage, it appears feasible, they know that doesn't lock them into anything, right? I mean, once you get to the right-of-way permit or the SDAP permit, they can say, well, now it doesn't look feasible. Now that we have more information, now that we have potholing, they're not locked in. It's not like they've got one shot to say feasible or not. At any of those stages, they can say feasible, Well, I don't want to keep going. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not sure that I totally agree with that statement. At the very least, from a reasonableness position, as an owner, I would want to know that my project's feasible before I spend thousands and thousands of dollars on consultant fees doing design work and architectural work for a project that can't be built. And so it behooves everybody, I think, in everybody's best interest to know right now, is this project buildable and constructible or not?
But as far as my question, I mean, they're not locked into a determination of feasibility at the 60% stage, right?
Well, again, it depends on whether or not you go with the hearing examiner's decision from 2020 that essentially said that you need to show now that it's feasible.
But just in your opinion, and I know that if you were the owner, you may do it one way or the other, but what I'm trying to get out of you is a yes, the county can say it's not feasible at the SDAP phase when they have more than 60% design or when they have any more information, when they have the potholing, they can say, yes, it is not feasible there. There's nothing about the granting of an ACUP or of an MDNS that precludes the county from later saying this is not feasible.
That's correct, but it's rare that you see that happen because these become self-fulfilling prophecies once it gets past this process. I can't think of any project off the top of my head that's ever been turned around after it's gone this far.
All right, so let me show you one other. This is an exhibit you looked at for a long time with, I'll see if I can pull it up, with Mr. Bricklin. Go into the foundational documents and go into page 2599. I think this is it. There. their screen and go here. You remember this exhibit, right?
Yes.
And I'll be honest, I was a little surprised that there is some water that's going to touch pavement that will end up being going south. I did not realize that.
Matt, which exhibit is this, Mr. Geckos? Did you say? Is this F1? Well, this is,
let me get to where you can actually see it. I'll scroll over.
Okay.
F26.
Oh, okay.
And the PDF page is 2599. And the page number of F26 is page 3.
Thank you.
Okay. So. But what I also noticed when you were analyzing this is there is this treatment structure here, right?
Correct. And
this will treat that water before it goes here, right?
Correct. It will be treated partially, assuming that the fall is there. But they forgot and didn't include flow control. So they need to have a detention tank or vault or pond for that stormwater runoff because it's more than 10,000 square feet.
Okay. But assuming it works, this water will be treated here before it exits here, right?
Right, without flow control treatment.
Okay. One other thing is, is it your understanding this is off of Mickleberry? This is the one way that goes in and out of the property for cars, just right here?
Yes.
Okay, so if that's the one way to go in and out for cars, are you really expecting an increase of traffic here on Mickleberry?
I don't think I said that there would be an increase in
traffic. You didn't say, but I just wanted to.
No, there would. I would not see that there being any significant increase in vehicular traffic on there. What I did say was that the ditch that's there now will be replaced by curb gutter, sidewalk, and a buried pipe.
Right. But I just didn't want people to be confused and think all the traffic from this project, since this is a dead end, if you go south, there's right. Nothing down there, is going to be increasing all the PPD6Q. Is that what it is?
6PPDQ.
Yep, on this road. It shouldn't be, right?
Well, there's 6 PPDQ being generated on all roads. What I did say was is the parking lots generate more than roads do because of the turning movement when you're in a parked position backing out of a stall and you crank your wheels to make a 90-degree turn and then head out. You're grinding more rubber off than you do just rolling down the road. But all I'm saying is that currently there is some treatment in the ditch or swale that runs down the roadside ditch, which will not be there after this project.
This ditch won't, right here where the frontage is being turned into a sidewalk, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Right now there's a ditch there. You can see it on the drawing, or if you go to the.
Oh, I've seen it in real life. I know there's a ditch right there.
Okay.
But I do have a question. And maybe you can help me with this. And I was trying to figure out exactly where the riprap pad is. Do you remember reading about a riprap pad?
I'm not sure what that's about. It looks like there's some kind of a riprap pad proposed at that, outfall south of the best driveway there, kind of right above that. I can't read it at this scale, but
you can see it on this.
Yeah, hang on a second here. I can look at another drawing here that I've got that shows that. Yeah, the outlet, it says outlet to existing ditch with riprap pad. So it looks like.
Says it on here?
Yeah, it's on that drawing there. So outlet to
this.
Yeah.
So this is the riprap pad right here.
Possibly.
Well, so then does that tell you that even if this turns into sidewalk with pipe underneath it and the actual ditch disappears from here, if there's a riprap pad, there's going to be some ditch remaining down here, not just a pipe, right?
Correct. Yeah. That's a ditch and pipe. Crossing driveways, but yeah, there'll be ditches down there. In turn, because there's no flow control for that additional 10,000 some odd square feet that's being added, over 10,000 square feet of a new impervious surface, the applicant is obligated to provide flow control. And that wasn't provided and wasn't addressed by the county.
Okay, but back to the ditch. So there, if there's a ditch there, there should be, and you mentioned you're not that impressed by infiltration because the water's high, but there should be some infiltration, especially if it's dry, right?
Yeah, I didn't say that I wasn't impressed by it, but yeah, there. I'm certain that there would be some infiltration through the ditch. Okay. Maybe not a whole lot, but there would be some.
Okay, I don't know if this is the best diagram for this next point, but that's the first I've heard of buildings being like a dam, but let's just say they are. Well, first, let me ask you, the 11 feet down, is that for every building or is that just for the ones on the right? On the, not even on this picture, but way over on the east.
Well, can you pull up the architectural drawings? I think they're down. If you go, see, what slide are you on now?
I'm on F26.
Yeah, go down to below F26. I think you get into the architectural drawings. If you can go down a couple of pages, 5 or 10 pages, you'll get into the architectural drawings.
We're getting closer or no?
I think you're getting closer. Hang on a sec here. Let me see if I can come up with the.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like we're getting closer.
Yep.
Are we?
Bear with me for a second here. Let me see if I can call it up.
Okay. I still want to be able to use my cursor. I can tell you where I'm going with this now if you want.
Well, what I think would be helpful for everybody to see here would be the
Well, let me ask my question, then if you need the other drawing, we can look for it, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so let's just assume for the sake of argument that this is 11 feet going down, right? This building, okay. That the footing goes down 11 feet, even though we know that because of the slope, that the footings might vary, you know, that these footings might not go down as far as the buildings on the right. Let's just assume for the sake of argument that it does, right?
Okay.
This one here. And are you also saying that the does the way it work is that perforated French drain pipe at the bottom of the footing? Is that how that works way down there?
What will happen is there'll be a gravel blanket up against the building.
Yeah.
That will intercept any groundwater that's flowing through that.
No, but just the question is about the location, where the location of that French drain is. Is it right at the bottom of the 11 feet?
Yes, it'd be at the bottom of the footing.
It's not going to be like 4 feet down or 6 feet down. If the footing is 11 feet down, then that's also where the French drain is, right?
Correct. But if the footing's 15 feet down, then the drain will be 15 feet.
Sure.
Down.
That's all I wanted to establish there. So yeah. Let's say that's the situation here, and you've got water flowing from a northeastern underground from the northeast onto this property, right? And if there was no building here, it would just go like this diagonally, right?
Yeah.
Assuming there's no underground obstructions, right?
And right.
And you're saying here it'll hit the footing and it'll sit there and it'll all go into the drain.
It won't sit there. It'll vertically drop down and be intercepted by the perf pipe at the footing.
Right. I understood that when you explained it before. But what I also wondered when I was listening to that is what stops it? Why can't it go over here? Why does it have to? I mean, if there's no barrier here, why can't it just... Then it is changing course, but what would stop it from just going this way?
Because
all that water for 11 feet.
It's all, there's going to be like a drawdown curve. You see that with wells that's going to go back out away from the face of the building so that the groundwater that's in that area in between the buildings, and you got a whole series of buildings and the buildings are kind of almost sat perpendicularly to the way the groundwater flows. And so all, again, all the water that those buildings intercept all the way down from the swale at the far east side of the property through buildings A through F or whatever it is there, are all going to be intercepted. So that's going to, intercept that groundwater and take it out of the hydraulic regime. And so that groundwater that was flowing to the south and onto the Best property is now going to be intercepted rather directly after the
And I understood, I don't mean to interrupt, but I understood your theory before, but I don't feel satisfied as to the answer to the question of why does it all have to go in there? If there's all this 11 feet of water and this is like a dam, there's nothing stopping it from going here while there's water in front of it between, you know, the water up above the drain. Why can't it just flow like this and flow like this? And
because it's going to flow in the direction of the gradient of the groundwater, which is towards the buildings. And once it encounters the drain rock in the building, it's going to go lickety-split into the perf pipe, into the pipe to the south, the tight line pipe that runs along the south side, and then out to the lagoon. So you're not going to get that water through there. It's going to intercept it and take it out of the hydraulic regime, and it's not going to meet minimum requirement four to maintain the drainage characteristics that exist on the site.
Well, let's say you have a French drain on a house, like around the outside of the house, because you don't want a wet basement, but then you get like a crack in your foundation or something. You're still going to get a wet basement, right? It's not all going to go into the French drain because there's another place for it to go, path of least resistance.
That's possible. You know, it depends on how good the French drain is and how wide it is. But if the water collects around the footing, then it's going to be discharged again out of the hydraulic regime and into that pipe. So my opinion as a professional engineer and having worked with storm drains and footing drains over many, many years is that these buildings with the drain rock, alley drain or whatever material they use on the face of the building is going to intercept the groundwater down to the footing level and transport it down off the site. And in turn, that base flow that's going to be generated by that interception of that groundwater is going to increase the base flow in the pipe going down Mickleberry Road and potentially cause flooding problems and erosional problems for the people down below, because that water has not been addressed as the requirement to analyze 1/4 mile downstream for stormwater impacts from a project. And all that between the project and the lagoon is less than 1/4 mile.
Okay, let's go to a new topic now. Now I want to look at Appellant's Exhibit 15. And I'm surprised this one is still up. Let me close that. And actually, 15. This you haven't testified about at all, but it is in, these are materials provided by you, I think, correct, that are in the record, and it's one of the exhibits.
I can't read that there, but.
Does this look familiar to you, what we're looking at?
The number 6 looks like mine.
Number 6, there should just be one image on your screen.
No, just that we still have your document tree, exhibits 1 through 18. That's what we're seeing.
Okay, but that's the problem with this. It'll only let me, I have to close everything out. And now you can see it probably, or nope. No, you've got to reshare it. All right, let me reshare now that that's closed. Share screen. Oh, come on. Share screen. And okay, how about now?
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah, I see the physical characteristics of the site. That's not, I don't believe that's my drawing.
This isn't from you?
No.
Okay, well, the only things I was going to ask you about it is why you were, what was the point of this exhibit? Because I know it shows a proposed stormwater park site right here by the Public Works, by the county. And this is the, and this is one of the appellant's exhibits. This is the subject property here where my cursor is below Buckland Hill Road. And you can see the conveyance here going out to the Buckland Hill Bridge, and under the Buckland Hill Bridge, you've got the outfall to Clear Creek. And you can't speak to this exhibit because this isn't one of yours?
No, that's correct. That's not one that I prepared.
Okay, well, I won't ask you questions about it then. But if maybe one of the other witnesses I'll be able to talk to about this, because I do have some questions on it. All right. Nothing else from Mr. Leiter.
Okay. Mr. Bricklin, back to you.
All right. Before I get into mine, I want to correct something I said earlier, where I responded to a question Mr. Lynn asked. I said, you know, we're pushing for analysis of the feasibility now. We're not actually asking that the system be installed now. Ms. Clungeon alerted me to the fact that, in fact, Mr. Leiter has said, you know, given the uncertainty and how close of a call it is going to be with regard to that drainage system, that it might be prudent for the county to require that that go in before other site work is done to confirm that, you know, the math actually works out in those tight quarters. You know, this assumes that somebody finally does do the work that's required to be done mathematically, and, you know, potholes, and comes up and says, yeah, we think they're going to say, no, it can't be done. But if they were to decide it could be done, Mr. Leiter's backup, if you will, condition on that point was, yeah, well, if you think you can just squeeze by, you still ought to put in a condition that that has to go in first before you do all the grading and clearing and everything else on the project site. So I want to correct that statement I made to the contrary. And it's possible that Mr. Lynn could have some questions to Mr. Leiter about that in that event.
So, Mr. Bricklin, do you think you have like more than 10 minutes of redirect here, or how long?
No, not necessarily. No, I'm pretty quick on redirect.
Okay. All right. Great. Go ahead.
But I thought before I launched into mine, if Mr. Lynn wanted to pursue that, he should have that opportunity since I was in error.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Mr. Lynn, go ahead.
I'm glad for the clarification, but I'm happy with the state of the record on that.
All right. Then I can proceed with my, with my redirect. So, you know, kind of big picture here, Mr. Leiter, your testimony on direct was that the hearing examiner determined that feasibility of this system, stormwater system, had to be determined at this stage and remanded for additional assessment of whether it was feasible. On that cross-examination, did any of those questions provide to you any evidence that further analysis has been done regarding the feasibility of getting that line up Mickleberry Road?
To answer that in two parts, yes, the hearing examiner did require that the feasibility be evaluated of the project. And no, I have not seen any further field investigation to show that that pipe can be put in, whether or not it's 18-inch or 24-inch.
And my question is even more finely tuned than that, not just whether you've seen any evidence in your entire review over the last many months, but today during the cross-examination, were any of the questions, did they provide you any evidence that there was further evaluation done of that issue?
No.
Let's see. And regarding your testimony that designs do evolve through the process, in a normal circumstance, is it your testimony to the hearing examiner last time around that while sometimes design processes evolve after this stage, it's critically important for feasibility to be determined now. Is that right? That
yes.
was your testimony last time. And yes. With regard to figuring it out, you know, when they're actually doing the work, are the utilities typically put in, you know, concurrently with doing the site work on a project, clearing, grading, and you put in the roads and put in the utilities and all that happens roughly concurrently. Is that right?
It depends on the project, but generally, yes.
All right. And if the county gave approval to this and, you know, green-lighted the site work, and then in the middle of that, they determined that it wasn't feasible to get this up to Buckland Hill Road, the harm wouldn't just be to the project proponent who would have spent a lot of money, but to the county that would have approved clearing and grading of a property and all the impacts associated with that for a project that turned out not to be feasible. Is that right?
Correct. And not only that, it would also impact the downstream property owners because of the, you know, if you started clearing and grading the site, moving earth around before you did the stormwater pipe and then left the site in a torn up condition, then that could cause turbid water and sediment to run off onto the best property and the other property owners south of there.
Okay. And then you were asked a question about, you know, when you're determining the design of a system to comply with the stormwater manual, do you follow the stormwater manual and not your own personal preferences? And you said, of course, if I'm trying to comply with the stormwater manual, I do what the stormwater manual says, correct?
Correct.
Separate, are you, but you're also familiar with the requirements of the State Environmental Policy Act, is that right?
Yes.
And when you're designing, when you're doing your work as an engineer, are you also cognizant of and try to comply with those requirements too?
I do.
All right. So I'm actually a little confused on one point here. It's in terms of the time of concentration, that is a factor that is used in the rational method. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
All right. And your testimony that they used an inappropriate time of concentration, that implies to me, tell me if I'm wrong, that they used the rational method. Is that right?
That's correct.
Did they or someone also use the Western Washington hydraulic method? There was a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, they did. There was in there too there's kind of a hodgepodge of different methods that are used in the drainage manual or the drainage report that the applicant submitted to the county. And it's difficult for me to follow what they did there because at one point they're using the rational method, and then another point they're using a different kind of method.
Well, so did they use both methods? Is that what you're saying? They used both the rational method where that time and concentration was used, and they then kind of used this Western Washington hydraulic method as
well? Yes. Yeah, they did.
All right. And did they come up with similar results or different results using the two? Or?
Well, they it's like, again, it's kind of a hodgepodge of different methods that they used in there. So it's really difficult for me to follow it. It would be one thing to use a straight calculation using the Western Washington hydraulic model, And there's another one using the rational method, and there are computer softwares that do it, but I actually did mine longhand so you could check the work and see how I did it and how our, you know, the assumptions that I made. When you use a computer software, a lot of times the assumptions that are made by the designer aren't shown in the final printout. So you get basically get the bottom line answer, but to check to see if it's right or not is very difficult.
Right. I have two more questions. The second one, Ms. Clungett, I'm having, oh, here it's finally opening up. Or maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Ms. Clungett, could you open up that document you sent me, and I might have you share your screen instead of me doing it.
Sure. All right, one second.
And while we wait for that, I can ask you my other question, maybe. You mentioned that the, and I'm not sure whether you said the road design manual or the utility design manual, one of them basically gives the utility company the ability to decide how much buffer they're going to get around their lines as it, in the case of a private project. Is that, did I hear that right?
Sort of. The King County, Kitsap County road design manual states that the county can direct a franchise utility to relocate, but it doesn't give the utility or the county the right to decrease the separation between the utility and a new private utility or a new stormwater pipe being put in by a developer.
All right. And do you happen to, and do you have a, happen to have a section number for that?
I did. Hang on a second here. See if I can find it quickly.
And if not, maybe we can just provide that to the examiner.
I think it's section 2.1.10, utility availability and conflicts. That's out of the drainage manual. I don't have the road design manual at my fingertips, but I could get it to you and we could submit it tomorrow.
All right. Thank you. And then the last question, Ms. Clungett, if you could share your screen.
It should be shared. Are you able to see it?
Not on my computer. Yes. Okay. So counsel asked you a question about, you know, and you corrected your testimony that the rational method may be used. That was up in paragraph, I'm not even seeing it.
Yes, right there. It says for all existing and proposed conveyance systems receiving right. drainage.
May be used. There it is in 4.2. And then if you would scroll down, Ms. Clungin, thank you. And then if you scroll down, council didn't ask you about the language a little later on the page. Where it says not only may the rational method be used, but more particularly says that it's preferred. Is that the language you've been referring to?
Yes.
All right. All right. That is all I have. Thank you very much. All right.
Okay. And so, Mr. Brickler, are you going to have any more witnesses or tomorrow, or is this, are we getting close?
We're getting close. We have one other expert witness who will be fairly short from the tribe. And then one lay witness.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I just wanted to give that heads up to the other parties so they can. Yep.
And actually, we had a question along those lines. In, you know, assuming we're done by 10 or 10:30, maybe at the latest, we'd like to, as we, what the sequence of expected witnesses will be from the respondents.
Okay. All right. And I know it's applicants next. So that'd be you, Mr. Lin.
Yes, we'll email that tonight. We're going to talk about it right after the hearing, but I expect you'll hear from our two wetland witnesses and our hydrogeologist as the first few.
Okay. Witnesses. And any estimate as to whether you think you'll be done tomorrow? It doesn't sound too promising, but.
I would agree. It does not sound too promising. I mean, we'll try not to be long, but there are obviously more issues that come up.
So. Okay. Yeah, we can talk about scheduling the fourth day tomorrow then, as opposed to today. So, and barring anything else, I think we can say we're adjourned for today and meet again tomorrow at 9. Is that okay with everybody?
Okay with me.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.